meerkats, robots, and opera singers. Okay, what have they got in common? Yeah, price comparison sites, haven't they? When you saw the title to my sermon tonight, anybody break out into song? Anybody at least singing it in their minds? Go compare. Comparing is something that we're actually doing all of the time. So whether it be fruit in a fruit bowl, we kind of approach the fruit bowl and we make a choice based on what we've seen, made upon the comparisons we've made. Perhaps the apple's bigger or rosier or got less blemishes on it. It can be a comparison of fruit. It can be a comparison of university. You go and have a look at the accommodation, the courses that are on offer, the location, the cost. You compare those things with other universities, or you know, we compare our energy bills. Go compare themarket.com, similar price comparison sites. They've brilliantly made a multi-million pound industry out of doing something we're doing all of the time. Getting people to do something they're doing all of the time, and that's compare things. And the big idea really behind those price comparison sites is to get you to compare something in order to save you from losing something. Make a comparison in order that you don't lose something, and in their case, so you don't lose money. Well, tonight in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 to 18, can I get you to log on? Can I get you to click on? Can I get you to buy into the Apostle Paul's very own comparison site? Designed not to save us from losing money, but designed instead to save us from losing something way more valuable. To save us from losing heart. There's actually three comparisons on show in those three verses. There's the inward versus the outward comparison, that's in verse 16. There's the momentary versus the eternal comparison, that's verse 17. And then there's the seen versus the unseen in verse 18. But before we look a little more closely at those comparisons, let's notice first of all that 2 Corinthians chapter 4 is bookended with a phrase. Did you notice it? Did you pick it up? Here's the phrase, therefore, or so, we do not lose heart. Therefore, or so, we do not lose heart. It's there in verse 1. It's there in verse 16. It's present at both the beginning and the end of the chapter. It's like a sandwich. And that's the phrase that gives us the context of the comparisons we're about to make. What is it to lose heart? What does that phrase actually mean? Well, to lose heart is to become deflated. So think of an inflatable boat that you've bought on holiday. You've gone on holiday with the kids. A bit of pester power, they get you to buy an inflatable dinghy. And you've spent a fortune to buy it. You've spent an age to pump it up. But you've not had it out on the sea very long when a little hole develops and the boat begins to sink. It starts losing air, it starts losing buoyancy, it starts losing efficiency. As the air drains out, that boat is no longer fit for purpose. And eventually, it sinks. To lose heart is to become deflated. It's to get that sinking feeling, it's to lose your will. It's to lose your motivation. It's to lose your enthusiasm. You know what I'm talking about here, don't you? You've experienced this kind of thing. To lose heart is to be resigned to defeat. Christians are prone to losing heart. Churches are prone to losing heart. Paul knows that. Paul's speaking out of real life circumstances, real life experiences, and he's speaking into real life experiences. He's writing to real Christians here in a real church. If you think for a moment back to those price comparison sites, think of some of the adverts, or maybe don't think of some of the adverts, but what are they trying to get us to do? What are they trying to get us to do? They're trying to get us to look somewhere. They're trying to get us to look into something to save us money. Well, Paul here is looking somewhere too. Paul's looking into something. Paul's seeing something. Paul's understanding something that enables him to say, in spite of all that he'd been through, all that he was going through, that he was not losing heart. And not only does he say he's not losing heart, he adds to that, but day by day, I'm being renewed. Isn't that an amazing thing that he says? Who doesn't want what Paul has? Who doesn't want what Paul has here? So what is it that Paul had? What did Paul see that enabled him to say such an amazing thing about his life? What was it? Well, that's what we're hopefully going to unfold over the next few minutes. Let's try and see if we can see what Paul saw. And in doing so, find ourselves equipped, guarded against losing heart, and being enabled to be renewed, energized, day by day. Okay, so to help us do that, what we're going to do, we're going to take three looks. Okay, so verse 16, we're going to look into the mirror. Verse 17, we're going to look into the scales. And then verse 18, we're going to look to the invisible. Alright? So let's start in verse 16. There's our first comparison, the inward versus the outward. So we do not lose heart. Though our outward self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. So to help us get to the bottom of that, we're going to take a look into the mirror. One survey that I looked at said that women look into their own reflection, at their own reflection 16 times a day, and some men up to 23 times a day. I don't know who, it didn't say who spends the most time looking at themselves, only the number of times they looked at themselves. But when Paul looked into the mirror, he was aware of two powerful realities at work in his life, not one. We're often aware of one powerful reality at work in our lives when we look into the mirror. But he's not aware of one, he's aware of two. He puts it like this: outwardly we are wasting away, but inwardly we are being renewed day by day. So the aging process was at work, that wasn't hard to see. The curse was at work, that's not hard to see. But he lets us know there's something else at work. There's another work taking place. A work that's not seen with the eyes. A work not seen in the mirror. But nevertheless, it's a powerful work. It's a powerful reality that he was speaking of here. He was experiencing a powerful daily inner reality that was also at work. Outwardly, he was decaying. But he was able to say, inwardly, I'm flourishing. The fleshly dimension of my life is fading, but the spiritual dimension is on the up. Outwardly, we know that Paul had many, many reasons to lose heart. If you know something of his story, you'll know that. What did the Apostle Paul, who'd been through so much, what did he see when he looked into the mirror? Well, he saw with every passing day that he was growing older and weaker. There was no denying it. He could see the wrinkles. He could see the scars of his suffering. He could see the signs of tiredness. We get a little insight into his life a little later in this same letter to the Corinthians. He says this: five times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes, less one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. For a night and a day I was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there is the daily pressure of me and my anxiety for all the churches. It gives us a little insight into his life, quite a telling insight. I think we could say that Paul's life had literally been spent for Christ. He was wearing his aging body out for the sake of Jesus and the spread of his gospel. But what he does here in these verses, from his own experiences, what he does, he firstly highlights something we already know, that our bodies are like jars of clay. He shares with us, he highlights something we already know, that our bodies are like jars of clay. But secondly, he highlights something we tend to not be so aware of, and that's that other power, that other reality at work from the inside out. That something of God, that treasure at work within us and through us. Now, I'm sure we can all connect to what Paul says about the clay pots. We all know and feel something of what it's like to have a body that's fragile. Just think of a clay pot for a moment, fragile and brittle, prone to crack and break and to leak. We all know something of that in our bodies. Yet, Paul says within the clay pot, within something so ordinary, within something so prone to illness, so prone to weakness, so prone to depression, so prone to tiredness, Paul can see something special at work. He sees, he knows, he experiences an inner reality. He's aware of something that keeps him going, that provides energy, a kind of a power source, a driving force that radically transforms the way Paul sees, views life and death. What does Paul see that has energized his service in that way? Well, firstly, he sees light. Look at verse 6. He sees light. For God, who said, "Let light shine out of darkness," has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Paul seeing light in dark places. Into the darkness of Paul's sinful heart, God had shone with the light of truth. God had shone with the light of revelation. God had shone with the light of the good news of the gospel. God had shone with the light of Jesus. Paul knew things in his heart were very different to how they used to be. God had transformed his heart. God had flooded his heart with light. And that changed everything for Paul. To the extent that he's able to describe this light as the treasure. So the treasure that he speaks of in verse 7 is really following on from that light. But we have this treasure. What treasure? The treasure that he's just been talking about. The light. This light of truth, this light of revelation, this light of the gospel, this light of Jesus, that's his treasure. He sees that, and the awareness of that treasure, he says, has empowered him when afflicted not to be crushed. That treasure had energized him when he was perplexed not to be in despair. When he was persecuted, to know that he was not forsaken. When he was struck down, to know that he could not be destroyed. That is logic, the outworking of his logic in verses 7 to 9. So he sees light. Then in verses 10 to 12, he sees God at work in him and through him. He sees Christ's image. He sees Christ's likeness was becoming clearer. It was increasing. It was growing in him. And it was also growing in those he was ministering to. He could see God at work in him and through him. He saw a sanctifying power at work in him and in the work of those he was ministering to. He talks about always carrying in the body the death of Jesus Christ, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies. For we who live are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh. So death is at work in us, but life in you. He was living for these other people, he was saying. The suffering he was going through was not futile. It was bearing fruit in Paul and in others. And he could look to that as a power, an energizing power, in spite of all those other things. He could see a work in him and in others. But he sees more. He sees a hope. Look at verse 14. Paul has a resurrection hope, knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and bring us with you into his presence. All was not lost for Paul's body. Though his flesh was dying, he knows that there's the power that raised Jesus from the dead was at work in him. And he knew that his body too would be raised. He would live eternally and he would live happily and he would live holy forever with the Lord and with God's people. And that's why he's able to say, for that reason, for these reasons, I will not lose heart. I will not give up. I will not be deflated. But he sees more than hope. Look at verse 15. He sees grace and he sees glory. For it is all for your sake, so that as grace extends to more and more people, it may increase thanksgiving to the glory of God. So Paul was someone who'd been saved by grace, God's free gift to the undeserving. He lived by this grace. His heart was held in the grip of grace. The outworking of that grace was a life lived for God and for others. And as he lived that life, he knew he was glorifying God. Though he was weak, God's strength was being made known through his weakness. Glory was coming to God from Paul's life. He could see grace at work. He could see glory for God. And as he saw all of those things, as he looked at those things, he was able to say, I will not lose heart. I am being renewed daily by these things. These are the things keeping me going in spite of everything I'm going through. So outwardly, Paul had lost many things, but the one thing he wasn't going to lose was heart. In the mirror, he saw clay, but in his heart, he saw this treasure within. Friends, where do you look to stop you from losing heart? Where do you look to? Who do you look to? What stops you in your service for the Lord Jesus Christ from becoming deflated? Can I get you to look where Paul looked? It's something you won't see in a mirror. Looking in the mirror will remind you that the outward is perishing. But would you look to these inner realities? And here's what I want you to see before we move on to the next comparison. that these powerful inner realities that Paul was speaking about were not exclusively his. Did you notice, as Nick read chapter 4, Paul speaks in the plural, not the singular. Verse 5, he talks about this light has shone in our hearts. Verse 7, but we have this treasure. Verse 16, we and our. Verse 17, us. Verse 18, we. Want to be saved from losing heart? Want to be renewed day by day? Want to experience what Paul experienced? You absolutely can. That's what Paul's sharing here. You absolutely can if you look where Paul looked. If you factor into your aging, if you factor into your diminishing, if you factor into your suffering, what Paul factored in. We've very much seen this power at work in a Christian friend there from our previous church. He's battled with cancer for a number of years. He's battled with cancer for as long as we've known him. And he's in hospital right now. And he doesn't have long to live. His body is about to give up. His organs are about to cease functioning. The cancer is at work. But there is another power at work also. There is another story. That light, that treasure, that likeness, that hope, that grace that Paul spoke of all, I've seen all of those things at work in our friend. He has a treasure in a clay pot. What will keep you from losing heart? Don't look to the pot. Look to the treasure. Our friend will lose his fight against cancer, but he will not lose. His wife will lose a husband. His kids will lose their dad. But they never need to lose heart if they look where Paul looked. In the most ordinary of pots, he stores the most extraordinary treasure. Second comparison, the momentary versus the eternal, verse 17. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. So look into the mirror. Secondly, look into the scales. Now, I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine a set of scales, but not a bathroom set of scales. I want you to imagine an old-fashioned kind of ingredient scale. Can you imagine that? So it's got a central pillar, a long arm across the top, some chains, and two baskets, one on either side. So when you put a weight in one side, that side goes down. It lifts the other side up, kind of a little like a seesaw. Paul's getting us to make another comparison here. And he's getting us to do that again so that we won't be tempted to lose heart even in the midst of our worst suffering. This comparison is a comparison between our momentary troubles here on earth and our eternal glory to come. So Paul is trying to get us to put in one side of the scales all of our suffering as a Christian. Let me just emphasize that word as a Christian. What Paul is talking about here is exclusively about and exclusively to Christian people. So Paul wants us to put in one side of the scales all of our sufferings as a Christian, and then on the other side, the weight of eternal glory to come. And wants us to weigh up the difference. Go compare, he's saying. Go and weigh up the difference. Light and momentary. You've got to be pretty sure of your guns to tell a persecuted Christian, to tell a Christian cancer patient, to tell a Christian parent who's lost a child or longing for a child, or a Christian employee who's getting discriminated against at work, or a Christian teenager who's getting bullied at school, or a lonely Christian hoping for friendship, or the blind Christian who's never seen, you've got to be pretty sure of your guns to say to somebody like that that your afflictions are light and momentary. Would you be brave enough to say that? Would you do a thing like that? Bear with me, says Paul. Bear with me. This is what I want you to do. I want you to take them. And I want you to take all of them, all of those troubles. I'm not saying they don't count. I'm not saying they won't register. I'm not saying they're not heavy. But I want you to take them and I want you to put them in the basket. Put them on one side of the scales. Okay, how's that picture looking in your mind? Okay, it should be pretty lopsided at the moment. Should be very one-sided in terms of our earthly trials. But here's what I want you to do now, says the Apostle Paul. I want you to start loading into the other side, into the other basket, the weight of eternal glory. Okay, Paul, I would very much like to do that, but what do you mean? What is the weight of eternal glory? What does he want us to include on this side of the scales? Well, quite simply, there's something to come in the Christian experience that will outweigh all of our trials, all of our suffering, all of our pain, all of our injustices, all of our afflictions, everything that we've endured, everything that we could perhaps call trouble here on earth. There is something that will outweigh them all. Paul refers to it as a weight of glory. And I think we can rightly think of this glory as both a place and a personal experience. Think of those two things in terms of a weight of eternal glory. Let me just show you that. There is a place we refer to as glory. It's a place where God's glory is known. Listen to Acts 7:55. But he, that's speaking is Stephen, full of the Holy Spirit, gazed into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God. It's a place sometimes referred to as heaven, a place Jesus referred to as paradise. But it's more than a place, it's a personal experience. It's not just a glory that will be revealed to us, it will be a glory revealed in us. One day the Lord Jesus Christ is coming again. And every believer will be given a glorious resurrection body, a body that will not be subject to illness or to cancer, or to aging, or to decay. We will receive a glorious new body that's fully equipped to inhabit a glorious new earth forevermore. It's not just a place, it's a personal experience. And the extent of this future glory, the place and the personal experience, enables Paul to say with confidence, put the weight of that into the scales. Put that into the scales as well. And when you do, then, in comparison to that weight, then all of your suffering on earth can be considered as light and momentary in comparison to that. And so imbalanced is it when we do that. Paul says, don't compare. It's not worth comparing. So outweighed are our current trials and sufferings by the weight of eternal glory, you don't need a recount. You don't need a second opinion. It's clear, it's conclusive. Can you imagine what the Christian's future must be like for Paul to say that? It's incredible. Can you imagine? Could you imagine what our future must be like for Paul to say such a thing, that such a weight could render his sufferings, our sufferings, as light and momentary in comparison? And it's not just that this weight of glory is waiting for us. That would be wonderful if that was the limit of what Paul was saying. But Paul doesn't say that. So something different to that. He says that our afflictions are achieving for us, or preparing for us, this glory. What does that mean? Remarkably and somewhat mysteriously, it means that your suffering, your pain, your persecutions, your troubles are not meaningless. They are not purposeless. They are not empty. They are not futile. They're not wasted. They have value. They are in some way and in a big way wonderfully connected to the glory to come. I don't claim to understand all of what Paul has in mind here, except it's glorious. And as Paul takes this weight of eternal glory into view, he was able to say, for that reason, when I look into the scales, I do not lose heart. That picture energizes me every day, whether I'm in prison, whether I'm on trial, whether I'm being beaten, the weight of eternal glory renews me every day. And then finally, and briefly, let's just look at the unseen. The seen versus the unseen. Verse 18, the final comparison. So look in the mirror, look in the scales, look at the invisible. It's kind of a summary of what he's been saying so far. Look at verse 18. As we look to the things that are, not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient or passing, but the things that are unseen are eternal. So here's the final comparison, or there's the final summary of comparisons. The things you see are passing away, but what is unseen is eternal. Christians who have lost heart have often lost something else first. They've lost sight of the invisible. They've lost sight of the eternal. Their eyes are fixed on what can be seen rather than what is unseen. So that house, that car, that career, that trophy, that look, those clothes, one day they will be burnt up. All of those things are passing. They're transient. So what Paul's doing here as he comes to the end of this chapter, he's hammering his point home by encouraging us to see beyond the things we can see. To see beyond the things we can see. Do you remember the story of Elisha and his servant? Do you remember when they were trapped in the city of Dothan by the Syrian army? So the servant of Elisha looked out. He looked over the city walls and he was terrified. There was a huge army surrounding the city. They were encamped around. They were fearsome. They were ready for battle. He was terrified, and he says this to Elisha, "Oh my Lord, what shall we do?" Elisha said, "Do not lose heart. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Elisha prayed, "Oh Lord, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes and he saw hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. What he saw initially caused him to lose heart, to get weak at the knees. You know, how can we fight this army? How can we defeat this army? We're outnumbered, we're outmaneuvered, we're outgunned, we're out of hope. And take another look, says Elisha. Take another look. Friends, where do you need to take another look? Where do the invisible and the eternal dimensions of life need to be brought back into focus for you? I was going to share with you a little bit of the story of John Patton tonight and his remarkable story, but time's run by. Friends, go compare. Nothing compares to this. There's so much more to see than the things we see. So can I urge you to go discover what Paul discovered. To go take a look in the mirror. Go take a look into the scales. Go take a look at the invisible. And do that every day. Find a way to look to those things every day. A daily renewing needs a daily viewing. We're so much like that inflatable boat. We so quickly, so easily become deflated. Every day we need pumping back up again. Paul's saying this is how to get pumped back up. Look into the mirror, look into the scales, look to the invisible. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Thank you for your patience in listening tonight. God bless you.